Welcome to the Disciple Making Leader Podcast, your resource for exploring the world of disciple making and leadership within the church. Discover Jesus' strategy for raising up leaders, growing the church, and multiplying a movement. Let's jump into today's episode and explore the power of a disciple making leader.
Well, welcome to another episode of the Disciple Making Leader Podcast. I'm your host for this episode today, Ben Borgman, the Executive Director of Disciple First. I've got my faithful friend here and podcast contributor, Pastor Craig Etheridge.
Brother Ben, how are you?
There he is. I'm great. I am great. Always when you're in the building, I am doing well.
Hey, man. Good to be here. Good to hang out with you. We got some really cool stuff to go through today.
We do. We have, if you're a listener or a consistent listener to Disciple Making Leader Podcast, you know, we've had a recent conversation that we posted from a church planting pastor with our church planting network, Cross Creek Network, from Israel, Pastor Israel. Now we have another conversation with another of our church planting partners through the Cross Creek Network from Montreal. And so another very, when you think of Montreal, you normally don't think of unreached people, hard situation, interesting culture, but it really is between the government dynamics, between just the post Christianity culture they're in. It's very fascinating listening to David, who we'll be talking to, David Poitier, and I'm sure I butchered his name, and I'll apologize next time I see.
Actually, you did pretty good. I'm impressed.
French is not my second language. I don't really have
one. You're not from Louisiana.
No, I only lived there for a little bit, so not long enough, and too far north for sure. But anyway, we're going to talk to Pastor David and about the uniqueness of where he serves in this exciting church planting movement that he has just been faithful to just keep kind of plugging away at. And it's super motivating and super encouraging. He's one of these guys, if you ever meet him or you ever get to see him, he's always smiling. He's always such an encourager. He's very soft-spoken, but man, you just know he's the real deal. He practices what he preaches, but he is just super encouraging. Every time I meet him, he's just kind of encouraging.
Yeah, he's fantastic. I just got back from visiting with David, preaching in his church, and man, God's just got his hand on him. This church started off with just maybe 100 or 200 people, quickly grown to now well over 1,000 people, multiple locations, and God is just using him. And boy, COVID was just draconian, you know, with the way that it was handled up there. And they have just continued to flourish. And you're going to see, I'm excited about this podcast because you're going to get to hear his passion. Mm-hmm. And again, there are some great disciple-making leader content in here because it's just going to come up to the surface. And after the interview, I'm going to point out a couple of things, but you'll hear it as you go through this, and just really dynamic and great stuff to apply to you today. So I can't wait for us to get into the content.
Yeah, and that's what I really appreciate about this conversation is in conversations like this where we're talking we can't really relate very well to what they're dealing with in that, but when you hear them and how they're approaching and their faith in God, in you know, both Pastor Israel and Pastor David, man, it is so encouraging, and it actually is applicable to what we're doing and where we're serving, and it really is. It kind of reinvigorates me to press forward and really just have a zeal for the Lord and have it just a very steadfastness to just making disciples and putting it out, because you hear their stories of how hard it is and the challenges that they're facing, and man, to me, it's like, oh, what excuse do I have? Let's get after it. You know, that's my response as I listen to this. And hopefully that's what our listeners will get too. You know, whether you're serving in, you know, a harsh situation, you're serving in whatever part of the country you're in, I think we all can learn from leaders like David.
Absolutely. So let's just jump right on into it.
Let's do it.
Well, I'm here with David Poitier, the senior pastor of La Chapelle Church in Montreal, Quebec. And man, David, tell us a little bit about La Chapelle and what's going on. How did your church even get started? Just kind of catch us up to speed on what's been happening over the last 10 years.
All right. Last fall we turned 10 years, and it's been a great journey for us. The context of Montreal and Quebec is something people don't really know. Like, North America is English, and there's Quebec.
Right.
8 million people, French-speaking, post-Catholic, in the 60s in Quebec, everybody went to church. If you did not went to church, you were just weird. And in 10 years, we went from everybody in church to no, almost nobody in church.
Wow.
Today is less than 1% of people that are going to church are practicing a Christian faith. So we called it the quiet revolution because it came so fast and so quick. People rejected the church. So now today, it's not only a big opportunity for the gospel, but also we need to be good missionaries and try to learn how to reach those people. So 10 years ago, we're like, okay, this city really have a big need. It's like 3 million people plus city. Most of the church plant in the last few years before we planted had failed, but like incredibly failed. Mm. But we felt that call and we say, we need to go there. And I was not urban. I was more suburbs guy. Right. But I felt that call. So I said, we need to become good missionaries, learn how to do mission and preach the gospel in that context and go plant a church. So we did that 10 years ago and God surprised us. We didn't expect what happened. People start to come, like non-believers. We started the church with about, after a month, we got plus 200 people. And we got a third of them that were non-Christian, unchurched people.
Wow.
So it get traction. We were preaching the gospel and maybe in a way that was really, people can relate to it. And we begin to baptize people. It grew. We add a service a year later. 2 years later, we were full two services.
Now, so you're meeting where?
We meet in school, right. High school, okay. which is weird a bit, but we were there and we're still there. So 2 years later, full. So we said, all right, we're going to plant a church, a new church out of need. And we thought, yeah, maybe this is something we need to do as a vision, not just out of, okay, we need more space, but maybe God is calling us to plant multiple churches. Mm-hmm. So after 2 years, we plant a second one. 4 years later, we plant a third one. 8 years later, a fourth one. Now we are going to plant our sixth church in a great neighborhood of Montreal called Cartierville. This is our next one right now.
Now, the way that you, I mean, I've been to your church.
Yes.
I've got opportunity to preach there one time or a couple of times. And I've seen these emerging leaders come
up. Yes.
And you just have a great job of identifying these emerging leaders, really investing in them, challenging them at the very beginning. I know you say, hey, if you want to be in leadership, show up and unload the truck at 5 a.m.
5:45.
So tell us a little bit about that. You know, pastors are listening to this maybe and saying, well, what does that look like? I can't get any leaders to do anything.
Yeah.
And you're finding leaders in a really hard place. So what does that look like?
I think it starts with a paradigm shift. People say, I don't have leaders. And we're more and more secular. So even in places like United States, now people are looking for leaders and say, I need to find leaders. I need to find leaders. And I think this paradigm is gone now. We need a new paradigm, which is I need to create leaders. I will not find leaders.
Right. They're not just walking in.
They're not there. I cannot. And in our culture, the language is a barrier. We do everything in French.
Right.
So to find leaders that are ready and French speaking, you just don't have them. So you have to think different. And it forced us in a good way to think about multiplying and training leaders. So it started there. But after that, I would say you really need to be devoted to that. If multiplying leaders is something you do among all the other things you do, you probably are not going to make it.
Yeah.
You need to devote everything through that lens, we are training people. It's a lifestyle more than something we do. So that's another paradigm shift we need to have. And I think even in places like United States, people need to begin to think like this.
Oh, absolutely. The average pastor is saying, I need to pray that somebody will change from their old church to us, our church, right? to lead. They're like, not like developing the ones that they have.
It's easier.
Right.
It's have been that way. Mm-hmm. But in our culture, if we think that way, we have nothing.
Right. You can't do that.
So we're not better. We're just forced to do it.
Right.
But it's a good thing.
Absolutely. It's so healthy. And I've seen it firsthand. And you're doing this in a context, not only is the community relatively unchurched, like you said, they've walked away from church.
Yes.
But you're also dealing with a government and a mindset among leaders there that is really making it difficult for churches, almost opposing churches.
Yes.
And so talk to us about that. What is the resistance you're feeling from leadership in your community?
One of the big challenge we have is that is meeting space. There is so much restrictions on where a church can meet, cannot meet. The religious zonings, most cities now in Quebec don't allow new religious zonings. Mm. But the religious crowd growing, not only because of Christianity. We grow a bit, but immigration, people from many kind of faith are coming. So religion is growing as a whole, but most city don't allow new religious zoning. So you have to deal with the existing one, which is a challenge because it's hard to find a place to meet. So we meet where we can meet. None of our church is have a 24/7 place to meet. We are portable in every church we planted, and we just rent on Sundays for like 5 or 6 hours on Sunday. We have to set up and unset up everything, and that's the way we do it because it's so hard to find a place to gather.
So when that happens, when does the day start on a Sunday morning? Like okay. What time does the day start?
So for our church in Rosemount, which is at the center of Montreal, this church, people show up at first volunteers and staff, 5:45 a.m. So I got up at 4:20 on Sundays. The guy that picked up the truck got up at 3:20 because we have no space to put the truck close to where we meet. So he needs to drive like a half hour, pick the truck, and bring it back where we meet. So it's a big, big challenge. It takes a lot of energy, a lot of engagement. And if you're not devoted to that, it becomes heavy really, really, really quickly. Right. So you need to be all in, and you need to create that culture where the staff, everybody is all in, and leverage that as a discipleship tool.
Right, right. And so people start showing up then around 5:45, you said, 6 o'clock, and then what happens?
Oh, so we set up everything. We unload the truck, and then we set up everything like stage and sound and kids equipment and everything till about probably 8:30. At 8:45, we got a rally with all the volunteers, all the people involved there. We pray together. We celebrate together. We cheer for the volunteers that having a kid or it's their birthday. So we rally. We pray together. And after that, it starts first service 9:30. And we got a second one at 11:30. And then we have to unset up everything. And our church culture is like, you don't come to church and go home. Our church culture is you come and you stay. You talk with people. You connect with people.
Right.
It's really important in our culture. So it delay the moment where we can unset up everything
right. And
start to put everything back in the truck. So some of our staff member, their day, when the truck closed, it's 4 p.m.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's a long day.
It's long days. Yeah. So you need to believe in what you do.
Right.
And everyone needs to be all in. And we're about disciple making in our church. That's our vision. So we say, let's make disciple while we are doing right. Fill the blank.
Right.
So unloading the truck is a discipleship opportunity. Of course, it's not all discipleship.
Of course.
You need your small group. You need to be connected. You need to be involved in somebody's life. Right. But we see those as everything we do is an opportunity to train people as a disciple.
Yeah. So in the midst of an unchurched community and in the midst of a really hostile community, as far as a lot of restrictions on
yes.
you, you're still seeing your church multiply.
Yeah.
And what would you attribute that to? I mean, when you see other churches are not necessarily doing that in Montreal, what would you attribute that multiplication growth mindset to in your church?
I would say first, the need is so big, less than 1% of people come to church. So when you see that context, you're like, we need to do something. So there is a holy, like, calling on this, like, we need to do that. But it's about creating the culture of multiplication. If you want just to multiply, it's too hard. You probably won't do it.
Right.
If it's a lifestyle, if it's a culture, then not only you set everybody in that direction, as a leader, I need to be the one that breeds air in that culture, you know, like put oxygen on that fire every week. It needs to be genuine. It needs to be a real passion for me. And then it positively leaks to everybody. And we create a staff culture where we are multipliers. Mm-hmm. But I would say that when you got this, it attracts people that maybe are not fully trained,
right.
maybe are not ready, but their heart are captured by this, and they want to join that mentality of multiplying.
Right.
So yeah. I think that's one aspect.
So it's
of it.
Contagious.
Yes,
and it's electric.
Yes.
And I've seen it for myself, and I agree with you. I think there's something about the cause.
Yes.
Everybody's on mission, and it's not comfortable to be
it's
there.
It's not at all.
But when the congregation comes together, there's a sense of excitement.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, I have a daughter that lives in New York City. I introduced you to her the other day, and she was just saying, you know, when you live in a place where there's not a lot of believers, you just really want to be with other believers.
Oh, yeah.
And there's this you're getting through the week to get to your family.
Yes.
And so that contributes to that. And then not only are we a family, but we're on a mission. We're getting things done and we're hearing stories. And so it raises the challenge, the expectation, but also the commitment level of the people in your congregation.
Yeah. And also that context create a kind of, I don't know how to describe it, a vibe, a something, you know, an it.
Right.
That when you come to church, we don't have Christian clubs, Christian book clubs, Christian right. hockey leagues, right. Christian, you know, something. We don't have Christian schools. We, right. So all week long, you're probably the only Christian, not only in your family, but at work, everywhere. So church is like a breath of fresh air.
Right.
And nobody comes because they're going to please grandma.
Right.
Or have a business opportunity at church.
Right. Or they have to do it.
Or they have to do it. No. Right. No, they if they're there, they want to be there.
Yeah.
And it creates something really special.
Yeah.
It creates a kind of atmosphere like, okay, this is like an oasis. And this is like a celebration.
Yeah.
And you can feel that when you come in any one of our church,
yeah.
you can feel that energy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, recently something has happened where
yeah.
you have been able to acquire a facility. Yeah.
That's
which has not happened in 10 years.
No.
And with all the restrictions, many times you probably thought it would never happen.
Oh, yeah.
So how did that come about, and why is that so significant to the future of La Chapelle in Montreal?
Okay. This is a great story. So thank you for asking that question. I love to share that story. 10 years on, I visited 85 buildings. Never worked. Never came close to work. 6 years ago, because I'm always looking for something, I'm on Google Map and I see that old Catholic church in a nice neighborhood. And I'm like, oh, maybe we can ran that thing. So I asked a staff member to go and meet with the priest. And it went bad. The priest, we said, can we rent? He said, no. Can we buy? No, you are never going to have this building. Literally, he said that. Okay. So we just said, all right, that's not for us. God, we'll have something else. We kept praying. But in 10 years, you can be discouraged. And sometimes people come to me and say, Dave, are you sure God want us to have a building? Maybe God don't want us to have a building. And I answered every time, if God don't give us a building, I'm totally fine with that. We are going to continue what we're doing. But I think God has something for us. So we kept praying. 6 years ago, don't working. I thought it was just dead. That thing's not going to happen. But 2 years ago, the building came for sale. So arrived there, I visited. I said, I know this place. This is a place we tried to rent like 4 years before. Right. And it was for sale, $3.1 million. So we visit and we said, okay, it's a lot of money, but maybe God will do that miracle if it's for us. So we made the offer. But when we do our diligence, we discovered underground huge oil tanks. It was there from the 50s, contaminating the soil. So it was too much for us because we already had asbestos, full of asbestos in the building, black mold. They didn't paint for 40 years. Like, it was a mess. So this was like too much. We said, okay, we're going to back off. And we thought it was dead, but we kept praying. A year later, they called us back and they said, Mr. David, we're going to lower the price from $3.6 million. They said, we're going to lower the price from $3.6 to $3.1 million. I said, okay. And then they say, we are going to pay to decontaminate the soil. And then I said, okay. And then they said, if you buy it, we're going to loan you 5 years, 0% interest rate. And then I said, okay.
And they had you at 0%. Oh,
0% was like Jesus is speaking right now. So we did it. We bought the thing, and we are now in a campaign to renovate the building because we need to put a lot more money. We bought it for $3 million. Now we need to put almost $4 million in it to make it functional and safe because the building was not safe. So God opened the door in a tremendous way for us. This is going to be not only for a new church plant, because we're not moving a church in that. We said, no, we need to multiply more and we need space. Our churches are full. So we need new space. So we said, we are going to plant a new church in that building and multiply. So that's the plan.
So that is so thrilling. I mean, to have a building that's your own,
yeah,
that gives you a footprint that will be there,
yeah,
consistent.
Yes.
Where I know week in and week out, you could have somebody complain and you're shut down. I mean,
it will serve as a new church plant. It will serve as a security net because honestly, with the number of churches we have, anyone can be shut down anytime. So we have a security there. We can add services. We can have plan B. So it's new church plan. It's security, like safe security net, but also it's about multiplication. Because this place, we got the church, and on the side, we got what we called a presbytery. This is a house where the priests were living in it. So we renovate that presbytery. This is done now. And we are going to start an internship program so that we will be able to multiply leaders and pastors more quickly. Because our vision is Montreal. It's French-speaking people in Montreal, in Quebec. But the French-speaking world, for the gospel, it's kind of the same context out of Africa than Quebec. If you go to France, if you go to Belgium, Switzerland, it's really low, the number of Christian. It's really, really low. So we got a bigger vision than just our state. We got a vision for the French-speaking world. And we want to plant churches in France, in Belgium, in Switzerland. God is bringing those French-speaking nations to our church. In our staff, we got people from all of those countries.
Wow.
And we are training them to go back one day in their place and plant a church there. So this project is not only about, okay, planting a new church, having a building. It's so much larger than that.
Right.
It's for the French speaking world to train leaders that gonna go and plant churches and make disciples everywhere where it's French speaking.
Yes. And just for those that are listening to this, you know, our relationship goes back several years.
Yes.
And we helped plant with Milan.
I think it was our second church plant that you stepped in. And,
right. And yes. So we've already been partnering in two other occasions.
Yes.
And you serve as a Cross Creek Network hub, so
yes.
you're kind of the hub go-to leader
yeah.
in that space in the French-speaking world,
yeah.
especially in Montreal, and as we move into Europe. And so this is a long relationship, and we've had we've just seen the fruit of your labor and your character. You've also worked with the with the North American Mission Board,
yeah.
you know, serving as a liaison there, and so. It's just our joy to just lock arms with you in this endeavor. Now, you've already purchased the building. So
yeah.
in this big give, we're not really helping you purchase a building as much as we are helping you to renovate
yes.
and prepare it and get the residency going and helping develop that out so
exactly.
that you can not only open the doors
yeah.
and have a new church plant there, but also to be able to have a kind of a launching pad.
Yeah.
Of this residency that will help us plant other words. So what does the future look like? You already mentioned a few of those countries, but what does the future look like?
Okay, like
maybe four, 6 years out?
Oh, yeah, 2 years. I mean, we already got a small group gathering in Strasbourg, France.
Okay.
I've been there a couple times, and they want to be us. They want us to plant a church there. So they meet in a house right now. It's a big house, but there are 50 people now.
Oh.
So now they had to kind of ask a neighbor if they can do the kids in the next house.
Oh.
And they do the adults in the other house. So it's growing, and we have a sense that God is doing something. We got people in our pipeline right now that are from that region,
okay.
that have a heart for that region. So not long from now, we may start our first church plant out of
yeah.
Montreal, out of Quebec,
yes.
and in France. And we know it's just the first step. This is our first one will be probably the hardest one to do.
Right.
But from that, it's going to be like a launching pad to plant other churches in other regions of France and Belgium. We got people from Belgium in our staff. We got people from Switzerland. Loic, that you know, is from Switzerland.
Right.
And you know, those guys are really efficient. So we God had positioned us with many resources, with people, with the knowledge of Cross Creek Network, that mm-hmm. discipleship mindset. We have been trained so, you know, you guys are making so much a difference to help us train people and disciple people well. We learn from you so much. So you got a good, huge part in that.
Yeah.
You guys are planting churches.
Yeah.
In Quebec, and we'll plant churches in Europe soon. That's we do that together. It's fantastic.
Yeah.
So we are grateful for what Cross Creek Church and Cross Creek Network is doing for us for all those years. And with the big give right now,
mm-hmm.
it's game changer for us. It would not be possible without the generosity of Cross Creek Church
yeah.
and Cross Creek Network. And I mean that. This is not an exaggeration at all. And the people that support this church and this network, they need to know that when they give in Big Give, for example, they're not only planning a church, they're not only provide for a building, they are now planning multiple churches and make multiple leaders through that give. So it's not just about one thing. It's a lot larger vision than that. And I want them to know that. They know it, but I want them to be reminded of that,
right?
Because they make a huge, huge difference with people that are considered unreached people groups.
Right.
French-speaking people in Quebec, 8 million, less than 1% reach.
Wow.
France, they're about 80 million now, less than 1% reach.
Wow.
Okay, so those are huge. French-speaking people out of Africa are unreached people groups. And you are making disciples and planting churches among those unreached people groups.
Well, it's a delight to do it and to do it with you, and just love you and thank you for the way you've just locked arms with us and embraced us. And we're learning so much from you. So it's a wonderful partnership.
It's a two-way thing.
Yeah.
And we feel love and respect. And you guys are the real deal. I mean, we are thankful that the influence you had on us in the last few years on discipleship is huge. And I'm thankful for that, really.
Amen. I remember our worship team went up there recently
and
got to hang out with your guys.
They got a great time.
Oh, yeah. They had a great time. And so anyway, it's a wonderful partnership, and we're just so thankful for you, David. Mm. We're excited for the big give. We're excited for what God's going to do through that investment in the kingdom and trusting that he's going to multiply the work.
He will. He is, and he will. Thank you very much.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Wow. I mean, again, when I meet David, when I talk to David and listening to that conversation every time, he is so encouraging. He's so positive. He's so consistent. I mean, he is by definition a disciple-making leader. He just bleeds it. It comes out in every conversation you have with him. And you guys just really inspired me, just your conversations and listening to his experiences and where he's serving. Man, I, again, like I said earlier, I'm just ready to go make disciples. I'm ready to just push through any challenge I have, and kind of makes all my challenges seem small. And what I'm dealing with here in the comfort of, you know, in Texas, and man, what excuses do I have to be a disciple-making leader?
Right. And the cool thing about doing this podcast is we find disciple-making leaders everywhere.
Yeah.
I mean, these are, David is a pastor, but we're going to be highlighting disciple-making leaders in the business world, disciple-making leaders in education, all over. You know, we have true disciple-making leaders who lead out of the overflow of their walk with God, intentionally invest in others, and multiply. And David is certainly putting that to work in Montreal. Ben, as I was listening to this, there were a couple of nuggets I just kind of wanted to, again, pull up. I'm sure you heard them, but I'll just tell them they stuck out to me, and God really spoke to me about it. One of them was David talked about this paradigm shift from I need to find leaders to I need to create leaders. I don't know if you noticed that, but I remember that was so good. But he said, I'm like, that's so good. Because, everybody's going, well, I need to find more leaders, you know. And he said, when you live where we are, there are no leaders coming to you.
Yeah. We don't have that luxury.
Yeah, nobody's moving their church membership, you know. So he said, we had to learn to create leaders. And I just thought that was such a great mindset shift for all of us. That if you are in ministry and you're hoping to find the next one that's going to come in the door to be a leader for you, you're going to be waiting a long time. Mm-hmm. That Jesus created the leaders, and he had a process to move them, you know, down his spiritual growth pathway, and then also elevate them up the pipeline as they matured. And David is actually putting this to work. And it was just great for him to articulate that. I thought that was very insightful and clear. Is your mindset now trying to find leaders or trying to create leaders?
Yeah, and that applies to everybody. We should not, even if we have people moving in from all over the place, like we do here in the Dallas-Fort Worth Metroplex. I mean, there's people moving in droves, and moving into churches and doing that, but that still shouldn't be our mindset. Our mindset still should be to develop these types of leaders, not just okay, this guy's great, now I can utilize him. We still should have that mindset.
Absolutely, and that requires intentionality.
Yeah.
And this is, you know, part of the training we do in the Disciple Making Leader book and the Disciple Making Leader workshop that we do is, how do you develop leaders like this? How do you create disciple-making leaders, not just superstar leaders, not just charismatic leaders, but really leaders that disciple and multiply themselves? David is doing it in Montreal, and I just love the way he articulated that principle. Another thing that he talked about was this creating a culture of multiplication. And he said, you know, that's got to be in the culture, that multiplication is, he said, if you're not really focused on this, it's probably not going to happen. That you got to intentionally work at not only you multiply leaders, but then those leaders help you multiply the ministry of the church. Mm-hmm. And a lot of churches do not have a multiplication mindset.
No.
You know, they're just like trying to build our one spot bigger. They might go multi-site campus, but they're certainly not talking a lot about planting and developing leaders and repopulating that. But David has captured that. And let me just say, when we recorded this interview, he was still in the high school that they started in. As of now, I want you to know that maybe this happened in December, I believe, or maybe early January. They lost their high school that they're meeting in.
He spoke about that. It was like, at any moment, we could lose any of these.
Well, it happened.
Yeah.
And our team was actually up there. I wasn't there, but guys from our team were up there just encouraging them. And they got word on a Friday that some upper level government leader said no more religious groups in schools, period, mm-hmm. full stop. And so they got the word on Friday that they can no longer go back.
Wow.
Now just think about that. You know, you've been in this one spot from the very beginning and now it's all gone. And so they had to pivot in a moment and figure out what to do. And here was a cool thing. Our guys that were on the field watching this happen, they did not see them crater. They did not see them cry. They didn't see them get mad, you know. In fact, they said it looked like there was a party going on because they had a worship service online because that's the only thing they could do in the moment at that short of notice. And they said they were praying and they were celebrating and they were thanking God and loving on each other. And I thought, man, David has created this resiliency in this congregation to say, hey, no matter what is thrown at us, we're just going to pivot and keep moving forward.
Yeah.
And as a result now, they've been able to, you know, he talked about buying this building. Mm-hmm. Well, so they've got that going. God's opened up another door for another location for them, and I got to preach in that location, and it's great. Yeah. So this idea of multiplication as a culture, it forces you to multiply your leaders. It also forces you to think outside the box. You know, so much of if our work is just always done in these four walls of our mm-hmm. given church building, then we get very comfortable with that. And then all of a sudden, we're not as resilient when problems come. You know, we really struggle. But David's always pressing the envelope and multiplying leaders and multiplying the church. So we say, Craig, you know, this is, you know, yeah, we're not happy about this, but we're flexible. We're resilient. We will adapt. Yeah. And I was there, and that's exactly what happened. And people were saved in every service. And it was just an amazing thing to watch. Yeah. And I think that's not just David's personality. I think it's how he is led.
Yeah.
He's multiplied leaders. He's multiplied the church and has created this resilient, optimistic, moving forward fortitude in the congregation that is quite dynamic.
Yeah, and again, he spoke about it. He has a vision to reach the entire French-speaking world for the gospel. And you don't do that by focusing inward focus. You have to be developing leaders. You have to be multiplying. You have to be looking outward. And man, what a great thing to be a part of is us, you know, with Cross Creek Church, with Disciple First, being able to train and coach them, and with the network. It is just it's humbling to me to say, hey, we have a very, very tiny part in that, but to see what God's using them to reach the entire French-speaking world.
Absolutely. We are publishing some of our resources, our Grow series in French that will be coming out this year. Super excited about that. We did the Disciple Making Leader training for them. They just ate it up. You know, they're already doing it, but they're just always wanting to grow and develop. And there's a learner mindset with them. There's a growth mindset that is very refreshing. And just as you're listening to this, you know, it'd be a good question to ask yourself, do I have that? You know, am I creating a culture of multiplication? Am I intentionally developing leaders? Do I have a sense of fortitude and flexibility and resiliency in the organization that I lead? And if not, what do I need to do to get better in that?
Yeah.
You know, we all have opportunity to grow. But David is a great example for us and inspiration for us in this area.
Yeah, he is. And Craig, so, you know, thank you for sharing that conversation with us, the work you're doing with them to encourage them and, you know, from a church standpoint, putting resources behind that and locking arms with them. And so it's super, that way we can be a part of it. We can be a part of something bigger than ourselves. And that's something that's super motivating for me. So thank you for that investment on your end. And if, as a listener, if you would like to know more about La Chapelle Church and David's ministry and, or the Cross Creek Network, we've got some connection points for you there in the show notes where you can reach out and let us know, and that way we can get you more information on them. And again, we just are super thankful that you chose to listen to this episode and this podcast, and we pray that you continue to press forward in becoming a disciple-making leader.
Imagine what it would look like to be part of a movement. Imagine raising up church leaders. Imagine launching disciple-making churches all over the world. Imagine you being a part of growing God's kingdom far beyond your own city. Well, you don't have to imagine, it's happening, and you can get involved. The Cross Creek Network is a church planting network committed to planting disciple-making churches in cities like Las Vegas, New York, Montreal, Lusaka, and entire regions like Asia, the Middle East, and Africa. If your heart's desire is to plant churches that make disciples and multiply, then join us. Together, we can make a difference that lasts for eternity. To find out more, go to crosscreeknetwork.com. That's crosscreeknetwork.com.
Thank you for listening to the Disciple Making Leader podcast, brought to you by Disciple First. We hope today's episode has been both helpful and challenging in your journey to becoming a disciple making leader. Don't forget to hit the subscribe button to make sure you hear the next episode. And if you have a moment, we'd love to hear your thoughts. Leave a review and share this podcast with your friends. Until next time, keep making Jesus the model for your life and ministry.